Hello, and welcome to The Middle. Conversations at the intersection of public relations, journalism, and marketing, where we talk about what's happening behind the scenes to tell and sell stories to audiences in North America and around the world. I'm your host, Sophie Natto, the National Media Lead at Edelman Canada. So, let's get that conversation started.
So we have three giant St. Bernard young boys here in the shelter as well, so we're hoping to find a special home for them.
The news goes by so fast, it's difficult to see patterns and trends while we're in the thick of it. The end of the year is a good time to pause and reflect on the world around us. So on this episode of The Middle, a look back at 2018 and a leap forward into 2019 trends. I'm joined by two of our favorite guests from season one of the show. If it happened in media this year, Matthew Ingram likely dug into it. Based here in Toronto, he's the chief digital writer at the Columbia Journalism Review. A journalism pro, he's worked for Fortune magazine, GigaOM, and spent many years with the Globe and Mail. And whatever you call Brad Ross, a unicorn or a rock star, he's had a killer year. Recently named the City of Toronto's chief communications officer, Brad spent the last decade as the executive director of corporate and customer communications for the Toronto Transit Commission. Okay, so let's break down the year, guys. There's been a lot going on. And as I mentioned, you're the two most popular people from my podcast series this year. Of course you are, right? It's a lot to live up to, Brad.
I'm prepared.
Okay, good.
I'm prepared.
So let's start with the most shared stories of the year. I went to our team here at Edelman and I asked them. I said, show me the stories that Canadians are sharing the most. And the list is super interesting. The number one shared story in Canada in 2018 was Paul McCartney's carpool karaoke with James Corden, where James Corden is crying because he was so moved by Paul McCartney. That's not a news story, but that is the most shared story for 2018. So how do you feel about that, Matthew?
So I'm a little conflicted because I hate James Corden.
Oh, my God.
I know that lots of people love him. He gets on my nerves.
Why?
And so I just find him too much.
Like, too much.
Yeah. So I just wanted him to calm down. And but I mean, that episode was great. And it was a great idea. And Paul McCartney's a lovely man. And it's the kind of thing that people like to share. You know, it's nice. It makes you feel good. I mean, it's perfect.
The most shared story, Brad, on CTV for 2018 was the story about the three St. Bernards in Edmonton looking for a home. Also not newsy, really.
But they were dogs, and they were cute, and I tell you, there not just a couple of months ago, there was a story about this husky that got trapped under one of our buses at Eglinton and Warden, and so I shared some photographs that our folks had taken and sent to me, and I just tweeted it out. Do you know this dog? And it just exploded. I did
people
all
love
sort-
dogs.
Yeah,
and it was a cute dog, and he was okay, and they were looking for the owner, and this was a Sunday, and I did, I don't know how many sort of radio and live hits with TV on the phone about this poor dog. They found the owner, so maybe in the end, that's, you know, the news helped reunite the owner and its dog.
But so it's interesting. Okay, so the third most shared story is a Trump story in Canada, where Twitter just pelts on Trump with photos of Obama in the rain at the cemetery visit at Remembrance Day ceremonies in Europe.
That I can get behind.
So the thing I thought was most interesting about that was the picture of Trump, I think, was from a different event.
That's right.
So it became a symbol of something, even though it wasn't that thing,
right.
which if you're an all right person, you would argue is fake news. But all it
are
shows
we even
is
using
that
this, we weren't, I mean, Brad and I were just talking, but we're not using those words anymore, Matthew. Very
well, we can with quotes
you
around them.
Okay,
you know,
fine.
I'm using it ironically, obviously.
Okay, fine. We'll
but it shows that people will grab a symbol like that to suggest something. And that and the dog example just reinforce that what makes people share things is that they feel something, an emotion, a strong emotion, hate, fear, love, whatever.
Right.
Dogs make people feel love. Trump makes people feel anger. Those things make you want to share stuff.
Right.
to that point, I worry when I see sort of obvious alt-left, if I can, complaints about Trump, because it gives the right some ammunition.
Right.
We don't need to exaggerate and make things up about the president of the United States to rationally criticize him.
Right.
When you go that other way, mm-hmm. That's a problem for me. I don't, you know, why are you doing that? You're mm-hmm. only giving ammunition to people who support him.
Right. And let's admit, this does happen quite a lot.
That was all of 2018. Just
there were
relentless.
Any number of examples of Trump refused to shake so-and-so's hand.
Yeah.
And it was a single picture of a fraction of a second. And then later he shook the guy's hand. But it became this massive symbol.
Right.
So people seize on these things that may or may not be quote-unquote accurate because they indicate something or they allow them to suggest something about themselves. It's performative in a way.
Yeah.
People want to show how angry they are or how much they love dogs or how much they hate. That's what social media does.
I mean, you, Brad, you just put up your last video at the TTC was you getting a Presto card very earnestly, lovingly for the brand. And you were just telling me.
Earnest enough.
People's like rage and like directed frustration at you, not just this time, but all throughout the year. I mean, it's gotten worse, hasn't it?
It's interesting. I mean, it was a very simple one take minute and 13 second video of me acknowledging that I had a employee pass as a benefit as being a TTC employee, mm-hmm. and now I'm going to go here to this machine to my left, and I'm going to buy my first Presto card because now I need to pay, and now I could sit like everybody else.
Earnest, like I said.
Sure. I had to put in my PIN and all of those. Or actually, I tapped and I didn't have to put in a PIN. It said, you know, because I tapped, I said, oh, I don't have to put in my PIN. Mm-hmm. And so one of the commenters was, oh, you see, the user experience of this machine is such that you thought you would have to. So it could go down mm-hmm. this rabbit hole mm-hmm. of just finding anything that could be wrong. And you know what? People are, and I always say this, people are passionate about transit in Toronto. And they will find ways to be helpful and in helping me do my job, and that's okay.
But it also shows the sort of outrage factor. I mean, one of my favorite comments, I can't even remember who came up with it, was, you know, I post on Twitter, I love pancakes. Number one response, why do you hate waffles? You know, people are looking for something to disagree with.
Yeah. So let's break that down. So let's get geeky about it. 2018 is the year where people really got on board with what did you call it? Like popularizing their anger or like amplifying
performative
responding to stuff on Twitter. And it's driving the news cycle, right? So clearly it doesn't just live on social, it's impacting the stories that people are consuming as well. Because when I looked at this list, I also thought, oh my goodness, what are the stories that aren't on this list? Because people are so focused on finding shareable content that what can make them look happy, angry, whatever, or get them an audience. This is the new normal? Is that, I guess?
And I think it's exaggerated by the fact that algorithms use that data to show you more of that.
Right.
And so that's where Facebook and Twitter and Instagram become, you know, echo chambers, because they're taking your feedback, the things that you do, and just showing you more and more of it to get more engagement.
Most of the top 10 stories, Brad, are Huffington Post stories. And you were saying, Matthew, before that, it's because Huffington Post has a lot of connection with the distribution channels like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So how on the PR side, how do we navigate this? I mean, unless you're a dog or really controversial, like how are we supposed to break through?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, nobody wants to share something that's really, you know, policy wonkish. Nobody wants to read something that's really policy wonkish. People want to be seen to be sharing, I think, something that is, you know, humorous or enlightening or fun, because that's reflective then of you who is sharing that that particular post. So mm-hmm. in this industry, you need to find that sweet spot between something that's, you know, serious and something that you can also have some fun with. What I did when I was at the TTC is every April Fool's, we would do a video, and we would be, in the end, there would be a sort of a not serious, but there would be an actual message or an action that you could perhaps take away, mm. you know, don't put your feet on the seats. Don't eat fried chicken on the subway and throw your bones on the floor.
That was a good campaign. You guys did a campaign around that too, didn't you?
We've done a number of etiquette kinds of campaigns because that's what people keep telling us they want to see. So we tried to do some fun things. We did some stuff with Seth Rogen. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to find that, you know, where does it fit at the same time by, you know, driving home a more serious message about behavior on public transit, which is something that people take very, very seriously and very personally.
Right. I mean, Matthew, what concerns me, I mean, so not every PR person is as creative as Brad is. That's one thing. And two, what concerns me is that there's this growing gap between what we need and what we want when it comes to content. And I wonder if that's a gulf that can be repaired or if it's just going to get worse in 2019 and we're going to be looking at more, you know, polarized content, I suppose, if you can apply polarization to that kind of situation.
I mean, that's the central problem with Facebook, right? Facebook is showing you more and more of what you want, even when it's not things that are good for you.
Right.
And so they're trying, I think, or they say they're trying, to show you more things that are important and less kind of just things you might click on. Mm-hmm. That's a really, really tough thing to do. I mean, if you think about it, newspapers and other media entities have been trying to do that since time immemorial. Yeah. Give people enough of the stuff they want that they'll buy your paper.
Right.
Even if you have to make it up, you know, if you have to invent men who live on the moon, go for it. As long as you can sell papers. That's one end of the spectrum. But then you also want to give them things that inform them and make them educated about their community and society. Unfortunately, in most cases, those aren't the things they're going to want to click on.
I think the broken nature of the business model around journalism may be exacerbating that situation as well, right? Because mm-hmm. if you need to make money at content, then you're probably going to go down the rabbit hole of, okay, how interesting can we be with this stuff, rather than how journalistically sound can we be with this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So supermarket tabloids have been doing that kind of stuff for years. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me, Matthew, that Bat Boy is not real?
No, Bat Boy is totally real.
Totally, right, 100%
okay.
real.
Thank you.
It's okay. Everything's going to be fine. It'll be just okay. I mean, once in a while, the intersection of what's happening in the ecosystem and what's happening in the news match for some perfect alignment. So the big story for 2018 where we saw that happen was the Humboldt Broncos bus mm-hmm. accident. So it ranks on all the most, you know, shared, most important stories of the year, of course, because it was tragic and horrific. And I think what's interesting is that it, because of the nature of that story, it's also it had enough of a tail that people are still talking about seatbelts on buses even today. So, you know, when it comes to breaking news and that kind of stuff, I don't know if you agree, Matthew, but I look at it and I think, okay, well, when it comes to pure news, like the van attack or the Broncos bus crash, everything goes back to normal and people behave in their consumption patterns quite predictably.
But to me, that's the same phenomenon.
Yeah.
I mean, why did people want to read it and share it? Because it's horrific.
Yeah.
Because it's
emotional response.
Yeah, it's an emotional response because you maybe have kids who play hockey, or if you're Canadian, maybe you have been on those buses. Maybe you saw them go by. Maybe you grew up in a small town. Mm. I mean, there are so many ways that story resonates with people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's not bad. That's what good stories do.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when the story and the way it's sort of pitched and the way it's massaged and turned into clickbait gets away from the actual facts.
Right. Alternative facts.
but just on that, I think that story also allowed Canadians to mourn together. Remember, everybody, mm-hmm. they put their hockey sticks out on the porch, right?
And
they did a lot of those types of things that kind of brought the country together. And sometimes, I think that's that emotional response mm-hmm. to not so much the social media piece, although people put a lot of pictures of hockey sticks on their porch,
mm-hmm.
Many sticks, one stick, you know, wearing remember Jersey Day, everybody wore a jersey to work,
and that's right.
Those pictures took, I mean, it was a real sort of, felt like a bit of a coming together for the country, and to your point, I don't think it was a bad thing. In fact, it was a tragic incident.
And those shared experiences, those sort of images, are the same thing Tim Hortons does in its marketing. I mean, you know, we're the place you go with your kid to get coffee in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes people feel good mm-hmm. about Tim Hortons. It works incredibly well.
It's like we're simultaneously chasing novelty and our own sort of like satisfactory sort of echo chambers at the same time, desperate for common shared experiences mm-hmm. that we can live through together. Matthew did talk very briefly there about when it's dangerous and around the idea of alternative facts. And I feel like this is the first year of my career where I've started to hear more and more people who aren't journalists, so people who create content either in marketing or PR, talk about how it's easier than ever to just operate with your own version of the truth. Mm. Like the Trump factor of 2018 has been really powerful. Brad, I don't know if, do you think, I mean, is this going to get worse or?
I think we in the public relations communications business have to be very mindful of clients and employers, as the case may be, of embracing this notion that the media are full of it, that when they call because they've got a story, because somebody tipped them off, that it's bullshit, mm-hmm. and so we are going to fight back, mm-hmm. and we're not going to talk, we're going to skirt, we're going to obfuscate, and I think that's really dangerous. I think there you can see the potential for that happening. Perhaps more so south of the border, but
mm-hmm. What's happening here? I mean, I don't know if you're familiar. Bombardier and the Globe and Mail have been at war mm-hmm. with each other for the last mm-hmm. year or so, to the point where Bombardier created their own website and they're basically arguing for their version of the truth and putting paid money behind it. By the way, too, if you check your Twitter feed, it's there.
Well, I can't comment on Bombardier.
Yeah, I can't really either, but it's an interesting case.
Fair enough. And so certainly there are tactics and there are right. strategies around that. But yeah. I think, you know, as a whole, I think it's important that we as those who give advice and counsel do not go down that path of attacking the media, because you're doing a disservice, frankly, to your customers and to your to your employees, mm-hmm. To potentially democracy as a whole. I think it's really important that we continue to have respect for the Fourth Estate. It's really critical, especially today.
Boy, Matthew, when the federal government made their announcement about funding for journalism, man, did that ever turn into a polarizing event almost mm-hmm. instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Brad and I agree, and I think he's right. But there are a lot of people, it seems, are quite happy to capitalize on this moment and you know, undertake Trump-esque kind of tactics.
I mean, whenever, you know, someone's going to write a big check, that tends to bring in, you know, just about everybody, because everyone needs that money.
Yeah.
Lots of media companies are struggling, even the large ones. And so the prospect of getting money from anybody, I think, is appealing, but it should be controversial. It's just a massive kind of conflict of interest walking around waiting to explode. And, you know, you might say, well, we can manage that conflict of interest. You know, we can take the money, but we'll be even harder on the government than we were before. But that's what everybody says just before they take the money.
Yeah, I mean, even guys like Barnier, there's an emerging sort of really right version of the conservatives who are starting to, you know, use the media as a wedge issue, I think, coming out of that, which worries me a lot going into 2019. I guess we'll be watching the trust barometer numbers. They come out in February just to see how bad trust in media is, trust in government, and also polarization.
I thought it was interesting that I just saw some Gallup numbers today, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
that said that trust in the media has actually increased.
Yeah, it's getting better, for sure.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, but the polarization and the echo chambers, I think, are still getting a lot worse. I mean,
sure.
Because you're seeing, like, the existence of the Toronto Sun, mm-hmm. for example, is a good, like, people are buying that newspaper
sure.
and reading that newspaper.
And Emily Bell at the Tau Center at Columbia has talked about the problems with using trust as a barometer. So I have relatives who I won't name who trust all sorts of goofy quasi news outlets to tell them the truth because they tell them what they want to hear.
Right.
There's lots of people who trust Breitbart. There's lots
right.
of people who trust Fox News.
Or Rebel.
So that's, you know, trust is a weird barometer. Like mm-hmm. you can't say trust is the same across all those. Mm-hmm. Trusting the New York Times is the same as trusting Breitbart. And there's lots of people who don't trust the New York Times who probably should.
Yeah. I mean, 2019, Brad, is a federal election year. You're going back to politics, essentially, in your new job with the city of Toronto. Well, I guess you're not
on the public
person,
service side of things,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, how are you feeling about polarization in the news media specifically and how it's impacting PR strategies?
Well, I have a very good relationship with the Toronto media, and I will hope to continue that when I'm at City Hall, and I don't see why I wouldn't. Look, they have jobs to do. We have job, we have a job to do. That's a health. There's a healthy sort of tension there, and that's always existed between reporters and the people or the institutions they cover. So I've not sort of seen that firsthand. Mm-hmm. Again, that may be because of, we operate a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. My philosophy as a public servant who does communications is that we are accountable mm-hmm. to the public, and I feel that it's my integrity, my credibility that's if we start to deviate from that, we'll become a problem for mm-hmm. me being able to do my job, because we also media relations is just one part of communications.
Right.
I feel that the city government, the municipal government, that's that one level of government that touches your life more than any other. Mm-hmm. Flip on a switch, mm-hmm. turn on a tap, go to a park, borrow a book, call 911, yeah. throw your garbage out, yeah. take public transit, right? Yeah, these are all municipal services that we rely on every single day.
Yeah.
And so if I want to do something tactically to talk directly to residents, let's say it's a little short video mm-hmm. or infographic about where your tax dollars go, do something creative and unique and different, mm-hmm. then my name is on that potentially, and so that's my credibility, my integrity, and mm-hmm. and I value that a lot. And so I think as communications people, we need to bear that in mind. Integrity is going to be maybe the new
integrity.
Maybe that'll be the word of 2019.
I like how you say you're accountable to the public, because journalists don't feel like they're accountable to anybody.
That's not a popular position at all. I'm sure the people at CBC specifically mm-hmm. would argue with you about that. I feel like one of the big trends that we saw emerge in 2018 and going into 2019 is the benefits, and I guess some of the issues with a collapsing media ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. So what we were talking about, Brad, this idea that a brand would be very creative and storytelling in their posture. Like in your public service position, it feels natural to you, but what's happening more and more on our side is businesses and brands are actually taking it upon themselves to show up in the ecosystem journalistically, or showing up with more creativity, right? And I think that that's definitely going to continue in 2019. I know, Matthew, we're seeing traditional advertising agencies, for instance, collapse. A lot of the media brands are starting to, fall apart and then rebuild, right? There's strategic change. There's opportunities in it, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of opportunities. There's opportunities to drive off a cliff. There's opportunities to...
Yeah, but I don't think we're driving off a cliff
anymore.
No,
there's good and bad opportunities. Yeah. But I think we're still seeing... We're in the very, very, very early stages, sort of innings of a long game. But what we're seeing is the impact of a decentralized information ecosystem. So anybody, literally, including the guy I walked by on the way here, can be... A media entity, can be a source of information or misinformation, can be a sort of node in a networked information ecosystem, distributing things. My favorite example of how this can go bad is the guy who shared I think it was a tweet about buses in his community during the election. And he'd seen all these buses go by, and he said, you know what, I'll bet those are buses of protesters, and they got bussed in here by, some Soros-funded foundation. Yeah. This guy is a nobody, just a guy in a town, nobody. And somehow his tweet gets picked up. Pretty soon it's on Tucker Carlson's show.
Yeah.
Newspapers are writing about it. It's that's how things happen. It's not, that's no longer an aberration. That is the new information ecosystem. Yeah. Anybody can play a role, for good or bad.
And I guess, Brad, it can be exploited as well. So, you're a good guy, you're a white hat in a PR world, but there are other people who know how to use that. I mean, you're actually like the embodiment of what Matthew's talking about. You on Twitter for TTC is exactly what he's talking about. The only difference between you and like another agent is that you're a good human.
Right, and
up to do the right thing.
What we saw with the Internet Research Agency and the way they weaponized Facebook that if you have a game, and algorithms in a way are a game, and the sort of attention economy is a game, it will get gamed by people whose job it is to figure out how to use it for nefarious purposes.
I feel like, Brad, then the answer is we have to keep fighting for white hat everything, right? And call out the bad shit, or yes.
Doing the right thing has never been Nobody has ever gotten burned by doing the right thing. I don't think. I hope not.
God forbid.
And, you know, and certainly I think our education school systems need to, you know, media literacy. It's all part of that. I mean, we know all of that. I think I'm going to say this. I have some faith in humanity that they will see.
Such an idealist.
They will see this guy for what he is, who's calling, you know, who says all these buses are full of protesters when they're just buses full of people. Mm. That in the end, good will triumph evil, and all of those wonderful. It's Christmas time here anyway, so we need to think positively. But I think in our industry, Sophie, and in communications and public, as long as those of us who are doing this work continue to fight for, you know, around integrity, around being, you know, transparent and providing good advice to our clients and to our employers, that's what. In the end, people really want, and there's all this noise in between. And when you get to the finish line, I think good will prevail.
I hope you're right.
I think so.
But
I
feel like you're wrong.
Why? Well, tell me why.
Well, I'm just because I'm a natural pessimist. Yeah. But as many journalists are, I think I feel like the where the money is not in doing the right thing. I'm not arguing that doing the right thing is valuable. But there are large, well-funded entities in both this country and the one to the south who are dedicated to doing the wrong thing. And those are the people that we need to worry about.
And we have an election, like I said, coming in this country in 2019. So are we ready, Matthew, to deal with the dark arts that you're talking
about?
Not
even close. Not even close.
So that's worrying, Brad.
Well, what we saw in the election in the U.S., is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, if you look at the stuff they're talking about, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, that is the tip of the iceberg. And this was one small entity, you know, bunch of losers.
You're talking about the Russians?
We're not talking about experts.
Right.
So this isn't the peak of what's possible. This is just the beginning.
Well, let's just keep shining light on it then, right?
Yes.
And expose it for what it is and disinfect it.
Disinfected.
I mean, you can't give up because of course there's bad.
Right.
Of course there are cockroaches in Toronto's finest restaurants. Of course there are.
Which ones?
But yeah, let's have a list right now.
I can't possibly comment on that. but we know all of that to be true. I don't disagree at all. And I just think as long as, you know, we can weaponize ourselves, if I can use that term, with a good dose of skepticism, and perhaps even some cynicism, then
My fear is that they're all immune to disinfectant.
Yeah.
Like they're like, you know, MRSA, a bug that is immune to everything we've come up with to fight it. Sunlight
doesn't
work.
When you say they, be clear, you mean politicians? Who do you mean?
No, I mean the operatives who work on behalf of politicians.
Because I had an interesting chat with friends on another panel discussion I do on a regular basis, where I was saying, you know, politicians can't give up to Brad's point about giving up about doing the right thing and not exploiting polarization for the benefit of getting votes. And my colleagues on the panel were saying, no, actually, it's all gone. It's done. People see the wedge. They see the opportunity. And now everybody's going to double down.
And I think
that
you've seen...
That can't be true, though,
It is
Matthew.
True.
It's
you've seen...
Depressing.
Not in every case. Not in every case. But I've already seen examples of U.S. politicians who said they tried to take the right course of action on a particular issue and got zero interest. And so they moved inevitably towards something that sparked more outrage because that's the way you get attention.
It's like newsrooms who tell me they're not going to do clickbait. And yet that's what we see a lot, right? Because their business model is designed for...
So and everybody, clickbait is what I call other people's stuff that I don't like, right? So everyone denies that they do clickbait and says everyone else does clickbait.
Right.
That's not even close to being true.
So we don't even know our own blind spots is what you're
everyone
saying.
Everyone does clickbait.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a long press for next year. I don't know.
I'll just say one last thing.
Yeah.
It's a long game.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing more and more indictments. So if you want to use the United States as an example, I think Robert Mueller is going to be a big hero and there's going to be a lot of news in 2019. I mean, who knows? Between when this podcast started and it ended, who knows what breaking news alert we'll have
you're
on
right.
our phone, right?
Yes, you're right.
There are so many things that we don't know
right.
that are coming down the pipe that will, you know, out this and out, and somebody will find another way to come in the side door. You're absolutely right. But we got to persist.
But I'm afraid that the bad guys are learning and adapting as quickly or faster. That will be, you know, a year from now, we'll be talking about deep fakes and videos that appear to be true that are clearly not true. I mean, we've got AI creating human faces that can be mapped onto people to make them say things they didn't say. That stuff is going to, that's going to up the ante by like 10, 100 times.
And I mean, we also, Brad, to be fair, and Matthew and I talk about this offline a lot, like Canada's in a very specific blind spot because it hasn't been doing the work necessary to understand what's happening in the ecosystem here. Like we can have this conversation about how 2018 went and what's happening next year. We don't know for sure. Like we know what the most shared stories are. We know people are leaning towards novelty and emotion in terms of what they're picking up. We know polarization is going to continue to be an issue because we've seen it in the US. But we actually don't know, like our newsrooms specifically, whether they'll survive or fail in 2019.
And we're in kindergarten compared to the US. I mean,
right.
I like to point out to my friends in the US when the biggest scandal we have is Justin Trudeau might have elbowed somebody on his way across the House of Commons. You know, that became...
He's had bigger ones since, like, India.
I know.
Have a long list.
But those things, and each one of them shows tiny, tiny sort of seeds or shoots of something that could be more serious, like people using doctored photos, people sort of misinterpreting things. That's the kind of thing that bad people are going to weaponize, and good people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we, I'm really depressed.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Yes, pass that.
None of this is going to happen. None of what I said is going to happen.
Water in this glass, damn it.
Everything's going to be fine.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Before I let you guys go, okay, give me one thing for 2019. What do you think the theme is going to be for 2019? What do we have to look forward to? I think we should get Matthew go first because you're going to end on an optimistic note. I know it. I can feel it.
Okay, chaos.
Great. Really? Yeah. For sure?
Yeah.
Oh, God. We're all going to tune out, aren't we?
Garbage fire.
The people who say they're disconnected from the news, 54% of Canadians, like maybe that, right? Chaos plus complete disconnection.
So that is one fear. I was just talking to somebody about it, that people are just literally overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed.
I'm done too.
But I used to think that's just because I'm too immersed in it. Mm. But I'm talking to lots of people who are just, it's too much.
Unless you're sharing dog stories.
And they feel instinctively that it's bad for you, which it clearly is. And so they just stop listening and stop paying attention, and I can't blame them.
Mm. Okay.
So on that point, perhaps people will take the opportunity to reset, to do some digital detoxification, to step back, to think about, to look at the source, to
maybe listen to more podcasts.
Yeah.
Maybe listen to more podcasts.
Yeah. especially this one,
of course.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do believe that 2019 is going to be a fascinating year south of the border for sure. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the emergence of presumably a candidate or candidates for
the
DNC.
Yeah.
And from a PR and comms perspective, Sophie, I think it's going to be one of holding the fort, making sure that our clients, that our employers do what is right as best as we possibly can, given Matthew's chaos and all those black hats running around out there, that there will be a balancing, and surely to goodness, as human beings, this isn't new, that this has always existed in some form or another. It's just certainly, you know, it's ubiquitous, and that's part of the problem, and that's where I think a reset might be helpful.
Okay. Well, you've given us lots to think about, guys, for 2018 going into 2019. Let me thank you both, not just for this podcast, but for joining me earlier in the season, and wish you both a wonderful new year.
Thanks, you
Happy
too.
New Year. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to continue the conversation, find us on Twitter. Matthew is at Matthew I, Brad is at Brad Ross TO, and I'm at Sophie Natto. That's it for season one of The Middle. Thanks to our production team, Josh Sam and Harmeet Singh, and the whole crew here at Edelman, and to you, our listeners. See you in 2019.